Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Our guest today has over 9 years' experience in performance physiotherapy. She also is a triathlete coach for the well-known Runners Academy. As a Lululemon ambassador, she shared her wealth of information and expertise to provide free tools and tips for runners. Now let's dive in and hear from Lindsay Scott. Welcome to the podcast.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, you two. Excited to be here.
I know it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, no, it's good. And it's funny. It was supposed to happen. We made it work. And so I'm going to tell you, it's funny because we all have kind of our Instagram handles and our names and all that stuff. For some strange reason, every time I refer to you, it's always Lindsay Scott Physio.
Yeah.
And
yes.
It's just because it's so like in my head every time, like, oh, you know, who are you interviewing next? Probably Lindsay Scott Physio.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I don't think she goes by Lindsay Scott Physio.
I don't know if this is a good thing. I guess it's helpful that it sticks, right?
Yeah, super interesting. Super interesting.
Well,
people remember Instagram handle versus names. I think it's just the uniqueness of that, you know,
yeah.
Or I've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I feel pressured to have a really amazing name.
Well, you should actually officially change your name to Lindsay Scott Physio.
Yeah, well, there you go. Done. Legally Next. Make that
The bank's
change.
Like, yep. No.
Lindsay, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Lindsay Scott before the physio. Let's talk about same thing we'd usually do with all our guests. It helps us paint the picture and get an appreciation for your background and stuff like that. We'll get into all the great stuff with the triathlons and physio and training, other specialists, et cetera, et cetera. But let's start with who Lindsay Scott is. How did sports become a thing for you?
Oh, gosh. It's always been who I am, to be active and to be participating in all of the sports growing up. I'm a mom, a runner, a clinician, an educator. I love a good confetti cannon. Who doesn't? An excellent cheer squad person. And yeah, I guess I didn't start running until a little bit later in life, but I always just played whatever sport was in season and just feel most myself when I'm active. And I'm lucky to be able to make a career out of helping other people find active pursuits that really light them up. So yeah.
And you mentioned just playing other sports. What was that preference of sport in university, college type of thing?
Yeah, so in university, I played rugby, which is not, it was an amazing experience. I think in my fourth year of university, my coach pulled me aside and very kindly said, you know, some athletes make better coaches than athletes. And I was like, okay, I can take that hint of like good leadership, not going anywhere as an elite rugby player. And I actually, after fourth year university, in a like, I think a lot of us can relate to, well, now what? In a panic move, I moved to Nepal for the better part of a year. And that's sort of where I really started running it was the first time in my life that I just didn't have show up and do what the coach says and have a team around me and that kind of thing. And I was like, okay, well, I need to move my person and this is my best bet. So started running. I was living in Kathmandu and it was overwhelming having always lived in my bubble in Toronto.
Wow.
But started running super early in the morning because it was the only time when I just didn't feel overstimulated when I had first arrived, and really found joy in getting to know the community that way. And started to recognize the woman on the corner who would wave to me every morning, and started to feel like it was part of a community. And that was, I think, my first taste of what a cool way to explore a place, but also to find some connection to a place. So that's really where I fell in love with the sport of running.
We all think it's got to be like mountains and Everest, yeah. All that stuff. Is it like super hilly, like, or is there any flat terrain there?
No, I mean, in Kathmandu, you're kind of in a valley. So you're surrounded, like there's Himalayas everywhere in the distance, depending on the time of year, the visibility changes. But yeah, it's not flat. it's tough running, but I think a little bit, I actually ran my first marathon while in Nepal, and it was definitely a case of like, what you don't know won't hurt you. Like I didn't know as a totally newer, I didn't even know how long a marathon was, probably, I don't know. And so it was a little bit, I didn't even really know like hills should be an intimidating thing. It was just like, let's True. See the temple at the top of this one kind of thing. So yeah, it was, I definitely think there was a lot of rookie mistakes that I wouldn't encourage anyone to do now, but I loved it. So there you go.
But to do this recreationally in a place like that, it's almost like you're doing elevation training.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably without realizing it.
Yeah, you had no idea that was a thing. So that might have conditioned you so well to then really doing the tough stuff and continue to stay in that segment of sport. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, it was easier accessible one being so far away from home.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real gift that opportunity gave me was to fall in love with the sport before there was any pressure on it. It's so easy to be like, oh, I want to run a 10K and I've heard this is a good time, or I want to beat this person, or this is what I'm building towards. But I really had the luxury of just totally falling in love with moving and exploring in that way before it was any, like, maybe I'll do a race, or maybe I'll do this, or maybe I'll do that. So yeah, I think back on that often when I find myself getting too competitive about it.
So Lindsay, how long did you stay in Nepal for?
Oh, it was about 8 months. And then I came home to Toronto and I started doing my master's in physiotherapy. And I was living at Yonge and Lawrence, but going to school at U of T, and sort of just kept running mostly because I was at the very least more consistent than the TTC. So some days faster, some days about the same amount of time, but at least predictable. So that's sort of how I became a runner. Or stuck with it once I was back in Toronto.
And coming back, did you had any early successes?
As a runner? I didn't. Do you know, I didn't do my first race. Maybe I did the Sporting Life 10K soon after coming back. But again, I would say, yeah, like I was told like, oh, that's a good time. But I wasn't involved enough in the run community or with other runners to really know, is that a huge success? Is it not? And I didn't really race then again much until I guess I was finished through physio school and then got a little bit more into, in particular, marathons and triathlons. So
that's interesting. So why was it? Is it just you just never liked the competition? You just never were interested in it?
I think I just was like, I was just running. It was fun. It was a way to commute. It wasn't. And I guess I didn't know anyone else who was doing it. So there was never a like, hey, you should try this, right? So I just, yeah, it was only once I had finished and a few friends from physio school were starting to do some half marathons and that kind of thing. So
yeah, and I think there is this misconception that anybody that runs is part of a crew, because there are mm-hmm. people that we've seen running that never came out to anything or participate. That's just their outlet, regardless of us thinking everyone that runs would try to get into a group. So there might have been a transition for you to then start thinking of connecting with others. What was that time there? Maybe there was someone that invited you along. What was that transition like?
So for me, I think so. First of all, this makes me feel old, but I think at the time there wasn't the same abundance of crews available to us in Toronto. Like now there's so many different options with different vibes, different feels, different parts of the city. And I think honestly it was that I became involved with Lululemon as an ambassador. So I think my first real exposure to that crew feeling was in a coaching role or in a leadership role. And I just really fell in love with introducing other people to the joy of running and how fun it is to just tap into your excitement around what's possible for myself as a runner and how that spills into every other aspect of our lives. So I started more in that leadership role and stuck with it. I mean, I think I started my first group with Lululemon in like 2010, and then back again in 2012 is when I finished physio school, and I'm still coaching with them aside from the pandemic now. So
interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a really fun community. And of course, I've gotten to know some of the other crews and groups around the city as well. But yeah, that was sort of my intro to it.
This is interesting, Lindsay. So I'm listening to like your story. And I think as runners, we all have different reasons for running. Mm-hmm. Some just do it recreationally to lose weight. Some do it for the social aspect. Just so many reasons. And I'm trying to understand, like, when you start running, is it, and I know you can't answer this question because we'd be speaking for everybody, but at a certain point you must think, well, I think I'm getting better. I enjoy this. It sounds like you weren't thinking about, oh, I'm getting really good at this, so I should probably test it in a race or something, which is interesting. Not everybody jumps into races, but how did you make the leap from just like a recreational runner, just, you know, hanging out in Nepal, back in Toronto, commuting from Yonge and Lawrence? How do you make the transition to then Lululemon. Where's that come from?
So I actually had worked for them briefly for a little bit. To like, turns out traveling and not making money for 8 months immediately after you graduate university means you need to make some money. So I was working for them for a brief period full time before I started physio school, and then I stuck with it. It was such a great community to be a part of. I stuck with it through physio school, even though on day one they're like, do not get yourself a job. But so I think that's how I sort of became involved. And I would say I definitely did get, I am quite competitive with myself and got very curious about what is possible for myself. I did have some early success in my first marathon in Toronto. I was overjoyed to be able to qualify for Boston. I remember crossing the finish line and someone was like, you've qualified for Boston. And I was like, what's that? Like I had, that race, I also crossed the finish line at the same time as Ed Whitlock, who as many people will know that name as a multi-time incredible legend. Record holder. Yeah, legend for sure. They like wrapped a Canadian flag around me and there was these huge celebrations. And I had no idea until the next day when it was on the front page of the Globe and Mail who he was or what this celebration was. I just was like, I finished the marathon, everyone. So I think a couple of early successes in racing kind of got me a little bit hungry of like, hey, I'm okay at this. And I did definitely get really competitive with it. I think I'm now at a point in my running career, though, where as much as I'm curious about what's possible for me still, I find so much more joy in supporting others in that. So I think that definitely has become my bigger focus. So I maybe that also has to do with becoming a mother of just like, the reality is it's no longer 100% up to me how I spend all my time. And yeah.
Trey, how many times did you get the Canadian flag wrapped around you? Because I lost track after zero.
Yeah, I'm still waiting. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was not for me, team. I was like having a little moment with a little bow, being like, thank you. And was mortified the next day when I was like, oh, that's, not for me. Yeah.
That's remarkable. Yeah.
But just to not even consider that you would have been able to finish in such a good time. And because your journey has been so different, where if you were part of a typical run crew, you probably would have heard about the actual competitive things. And I feel like Lululemon doesn't push being competitive in that space. So no one was maybe having those conversations of, you know, qualify for Boston, go faster. This run pack is a faster pace than the other. With Lululemon, their run actual organization was more of just recreational connecting with each other. So maybe that's why you weren't introduced to it that early. And obviously, you know, I'm sure just by default, you start hearing about races. But exactly. That makes me understood where you were from. Because you might have been right out of Nepal, just faster than Ed Whitlock. And just not know, right? Yeah. And that's such an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Not know.
Yeah. Well, and I sometimes when I speak with new runners who are feeling intimidated and that kind of thing, I sometimes say to them, I'm almost envious of you being in this position where you don't 100% know, like you're just out there with no expectations of like, I'd just love to finish this, or I just want to see what I'm capable of, right? And it's hard to kind of undo that. Now if I set foot on a start line for a marathon, it takes a lot of mental work to talk myself out of like, if I don't get this exact time and this is my strategy and this and this and this, of I think there's something to be said for just like, here's my day to celebrate the hard work I've put in. And it's hard to do that once you're getting more competitive. So
that's so. And I thought of it now, where just the way you mentioned there's a snow, it's almost like knowing too much could hurt you.
I mean, yeah, I think so. And knowing too much, knowing enough just means that you need to employ more mental strategies to make sure that you take some of that, what becomes self-talk, and make it positive for yourself, right? Like make it fuel rather than scary in some way.
I love how you said that kind of as a new runner, you don't realize your potential. Even as kind of seasoned runners, we also don't know our potential. That's why we push ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely like a much more pure moment, right? When you're like starting out, because you like run a 10K in 50 minutes and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a few years later, you're running in like 39 minutes. Like, wait, okay, I could do that. It's remarkable to think that, you know, you don't really, and that's kind of runners in general. We're always looking for that next, where are we? Like, how could we move like incrementally down in times? And to not know your potential is a beautiful thing, because it just drives you sometimes to want to find out.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we say a lot in clinic, or when I'm in a coaching role, is just that there's no perfect way to train for any of these. Like, if there was a perfect marathon plan, then you wouldn't be able to Google it and have a million hits, right? And like, coaches wouldn't really exist that much. But the fun part about running is every experience, every race, every training run is an opportunity to learn something, put that back into your back pocket and try and tease out what works best for you. And then, of course, the next time you go about it, you're going to learn something more, or something may have changed as well, right? So it's kind of this endless curiosity of how do we just fine tune a little bit more. And I also think when you move early on in your running career, every race feels like a PB almost, you know, like, and then you very quickly learn like, wait, it turns out I can't just keep improving incrementally every single time I set foot out there, right? So that's, I think, kind of a harsh realization for a lot of us, but that makes us only hungrier.
Definitely. And with the premise, it's similar to when you don't have to look at your watch when you're running, because then if it's in a positive light, we're seeing our splits getting negative. In a negative light, you notice that you won't finish at the time you put in your head. So the mind game, as you said earlier, would probably work against you. But being such a newbie to the space, you'd be impressed. As Jonathan said, you know, you reach your own ability and got a little bit further than you thought you could, gives you so much more reward. But then you reach to a plateau, and then you're like, maybe if I get a new coach,
yeah,
everything, and then the weather, and maybe there are so many different approach individual stakes. So I've seen it where if I spend more money on the gear, I'll be faster, or if I spend more money on the coach, or if I just the different approaches. And again, it'll come down to the individual, you know, life happens. But a lot of us have untapped potential.
Yeah.
You know, I made the point where, really quick, there are a lot of Jamaican sprinters that may have not tried long distance running that might be so good because they're not Usain Bolt speed, but they had so much more stamina for endurance running than they do for sprinting. And it's just a missed opportunity, just from anywhere in the world, really. But just my thought process behind not always wanting to do the top thing, because right now, Boston is the top thing for everyone.
Yes, yes, I hear you. Well, and I think it's also, again, that comes back to sometimes the narratives that we tell ourselves. So I've always told myself like, oh, I'm way stronger at a marathon than I am at a 5K. Like, I'm not fast. I just have good endurance kind of thing. But also that's just because I now have, but for the longest time, I had never trained for a 5K. Like, of course I don't have an impressive 5K time if I'm targeting my training to other distances, right? So it's fun as you start to play around with, if I tweak this and do that, how does that show up for me in my running?
Did you start getting more serious after you qualified for Boston?
Yeah, definitely I did. I guess it's just, as you start to learn more and you start to recognize how many people have worked really hard for so long for that without being able to do it, you start to think of it as like, wow, this is like kind of a, like, it's really a privilege to be able to do this for a number of 100%. Reasons. But so yes, I definitely did start to get more competitive about it. I also at that point had started to date my husband, who is by far the more competitive with himself of the two of us. We joke a little bit that if I think I can complete a race and we'll say like 2 hours, then I'll say my goal is 2:05. Like, I like to protect my ego a little bit that way. And I've had to work to be like, no, Lindsay, like, dig deep and see what's possible for you. But my husband, if he thinks he can do a race in 2 hours, he's like, so 1:45, that's my goal. So I think being around that more too, definitely got me a little bit more curious about like, why am I not asking more of myself here? And that's also around the time that I started to get into triathlon and had a similar experience where in some of my early races, I just was lucky, able to qualify for some pretty big and cool races. And so it got me really curious there as well.
How did your tri career start? What was that, you know, first race kind of scenario? And why would you approach that?
Oh man, the first race was like me being like, why did I agree to this? Like, in what world was this a good life decision as you stand waiting to get into the water? I had gotten more into cycling. I had been participating in the Ride to Conquer Cancer for a few years. My family, my dad has chronic leukemia. And so it became a really important tool for us to sort of take action in a moment that you felt so helpless. And so I was getting more and more into cycling through that. And so I think at one point it kind of just felt like, well, I'm already doing two of the three, like just put your name in there and see what happens. But, you know, I don't know how many races I've done, but I've done distance from sprint up to Ironman now, and I still stand in that wetsuit waiting to get in the water, being like, why? Like, in what world did I think this was a great life decision? But as soon as I'm in the water, I'm like, oh, this is why. This is so fun. So that definitely, triathlon makes me more nervous than running races. I think just because there's so many more things that could go wrong, right? Add two more sports and it can get a little bit dicier. But I think that's also why I love it, is because it feels a little bit less pressure on myself, because like, you're just going to have to roll with things that aren't going to be perfect. So.
And do you kind of go between the two? Do you have a preference?
Yeah. Well, oh gosh, this is a game that I play on the regular. I don't know why I torture myself. Like, if you could only pick one sport, which one would it be? And I'd have to say triathlon, but largely because
you get to run.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, and it's fun because as someone who, the strongest of the three sports is running for me. So it's kind of fun to get off the bike and you just pass people for the whole run, right? And that definitely feels good and isn't the way that I usually finish a marathon, of like, see ya, bye, pick off the next person. But I also just have learned about myself that I will always run my best when I'm cross training, right? Like, the cycling makes me so much stronger as a runner. So I've started, even in, if I'm in like a marathon training block, I'll still do some pretty hard bike workouts. Forget the pool. Don't put yourself through that unless you're racing. But some hard bike workouts go such a long way for me as a runner. And so I think I've learned a lot about myself through triathlon, and it definitely is a really fun sport. But I'm not giving up running anytime soon. It's all good.
But that helps with so much of your career too, professionally. Giving advice, you do the sport and fix individuals that do the sport as well on whatever level, performance-wise or recreationally. And you've shared tips on your Instagram that will speak to someone of different caliber. There's a particular one that I've seen where it was about the glutes. And in fact, yes. I would talk about her glutes, but just the real knowledge there than someone at a run group telling you something.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that happens. If people pass it on. So, oh, yeah, IT man, you just probably sprain your fingernail. It's like,
yeah,
what?
Yes. That glute thing is one thing that everyone always comes in and they're like, oh, yeah, I think it's because I have weak glutes, which, like, we talk a lot in the clinic about running as a skill. And if you're just not setting, like, if you're running in a way that doesn't let you use your glutes, then who cares how strong they are, right? And so, not to say that there's not huge, immense benefit from a performance perspective to strength training, but at the end of the day, it's just so fun to be able to share these tools with athletes, to be like, hey, have you ever considered this and how much stronger that could make you, right? And in particular, I have a real passion for teaching people about run technique and gait, in that everyone, we all just kind of assume we know how to run, right? Like, we've all done it since we were 18 months old. But pick literally any other sport, tennis, we'll say. Like, if I had a really big tennis goal, would I go and just hit a ball against a wall at the local schoolyard a million times and expect to be really great at tennis? Like, no, right? I would get some coaching. I would do some drills. I would put myself in game situations. Like, but for some reason with running, we all just kind of assume we know how to do it. And so I have the great joy of being able to spend my days sort of giving people a little bit of insight and a little bit of knowledge to try and be like, oh yeah, if like with a few little tweaks or considerations, we can make a world of difference here, both from injury and performance.
You brought up work. Let's talk about work. Help us out here. Did being in sports drive the vocation, or were you kind of driven to sports because of your education? Like, what kind of, or did they come at the same time?
Certainly, I've always, since childhood, been a really active person. And so certainly physio made sense from that perspective. And I've always just been really curious about the human body and what we're capable of and that sort of thing. And so that, I think, is what inspired me to go to physio school. When I was in Nepal, actually, I was there kind of in a panic of like, what am I doing with my life? But when I was there, it wasn't a terribly stable political environment. And so there were a lot of days where it just wasn't safe for me to be traveling to the schools that I was teaching in. But the place I was staying was sort of sandwiched in between like an elite soccer training center, as well as basically a home for children who had leprosy, and so had all kinds of repercussions from that. And so it was cool to see, on the days I couldn't travel to the schools, I would kind of just go to those places to fill my day and work with whoever was around. And so it was cool just to sort of see these two very different environments that a physiotherapist could have impact in. And so that, I think, was sort of the thing that drove me from like, hey, physio might be an option, to like, this is what I'm going to do. And then when I first graduated, I worked in a lot of clinics that were wonderful and full of amazing humans, but it wasn't necessarily my population. And I really, I knew I wanted to work with runners and at the very least athletes. Largely, like, it's they push me. They're a demanding population, but they also really want to be there and really want to get better.
What are you saying?
Yeah. Demanding. Yeah. You're a very demanding human. So no.
What has Brittany been saying?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing but good things. I promise.
I'm sure you get that. Someone comes in that needs to be, get a proper gait analysis and just like, hey, can I just not run? And yeah. Or they obviously try to give you their education first. It's something I would have done.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, you know, and in terms of gait, just touching back on a little bit there. So a lot of us don't know what that is. In a quick summary, could you like explain why that's necessary or important that is?
So it is necessary for a number of reasons, largely like performance and injury mostly, which are very closely tied. If you're running in such a way that you're going to increase the load on a given tissue that would make you more likely to develop an injury, you're also likely running in a way that's just not terribly efficient, right? So one of the things that we say, so use the example of a marathon. So if I'm running a marathon, I'm going to be on average, we'll say like 38 to 40,000 steps taken. And each one of those steps that I take is 2.5 to 6 times my body weight of load that I'm up against every single time. So imagine if we can just make each one of those 38 to 40,000 steps increment, like just a teeny tiny little bit more efficient, then think of your potential as an athlete there, right? And I think especially in a sport, you know, we're spending $400 on the shoes and we're all excited about how much mileage are you running? Like, what's your run volume this week? And I cracked 50K. Oh, I cracked 100K and that. And it's just when you break it down to like all those steps and all those loads and that, it's we can pretty quickly see some really exciting potential that for a lot of runners isn't tapped into. As well as I just spend a lot of time educating about things like the importance of recovery, the number of runners who are out there just running through fatigue all the time and are like, I'm just not getting better. And it's like, well, when was the last time you even took a week with no pressure to run, right?
Yeah, but I have a 2,000-day run streak. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That depends a little bit on your goals, right? Maybe, but yeah. So yeah, it's a cool place to work, that's for sure.
But you did pick out all those, you know, excuses or the things that we do talk about. I think they're because they're all outward things that have a quantitative result and not the recovery. We don't brag about, yeah, I had 2 days off,
yes.
You know? So
yes.
It's the actual things that are performance-based or they're measurable to compare. And you're right about just us saying, well, I'm doing this per week and you get asked that. And we were talking about different categories earlier, when I'm just starting, I just want to be able to finish 5. And then now I'm like, yeah, I'm doing better now. Now I'm like, I want to win this race. And obviously our banter becomes about the typical things. And, you know, I guess we just try to be off a different clan each time we go, you know.
Totally. I often say to athletes, whether it's in clinic or coaching, that like, it's not about doing more. It's about being like more intentional with what you're doing, right? So, you know, every run should have some purpose, and that purpose might be super easy runs or just keep the run streak alive, right? But you need to remember that if you're showing up and you're going all out every single day, then you're not going to really truly be able to show up for your next speed session. You're not really going to be able to perform at your best, right? So even the pros take off seasons, and the off season can look really different, but there is often, I think, a fear of losing fitness and that sort of thing that we try and squash that of like, it's okay to not always be at your peak, right? In fact, you can't always be at your peak. You'll burn out.
Agreed. I'm curious, Lindsay, if maybe you could just kind of help us through this. Is there a difference between like a sports physiotherapist and a physiotherapist that may treat people who had trauma or maybe amputee or something like that? And the reason why I ask the question is because when someone comes to see you, and they said, well, something hurts, something doesn't feel right. You know, you just walked us through the whole, the cadence and the weight on all that stuff. Is that something that like all physiotherapists think about? Or do you have the benefit of, because you work with runners, you take a different perspective and say, okay, we're focusing on a very specific thing here. You're a runner. So this is the impact it has on your body, your joints, et cetera. This is how you can get longevity in the sport, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So is that true? Like, do physiotherapists have different kind of flavors or spins to them?
100%. Yes. You graduate physiotherapy school very much a generalist. Like, I could have gone and worked in the ICU, probably not favorable because when I was in physio school, I passed out in the ICU. So you don't want me there. I could have worked in pediatrics. I could have worked in a ton of different environments. Most of us do kind of tease out, like, what is my ideal work environment and what is my ideal population to be working with? But definitely, like, in physio school, we didn't talk, I don't think we had a single hour-long lecture on running. So it very much became sort of a passion project of mine to learn more. I was lucky enough to connect with a lot with clinicians who had a similar interest and to learn with and from them. And then it also initially just became sort of shouting it from the rooftops of like, hey, I'm diving into this as much as I can. Like, can I help you out if you're a runner? And going and speaking at run groups or sort of dabbling and meeting different people in the run community to sort of get to know what was going on. But I now at this point, I mean, I have done a second, like an additional degree in advanced orthopedics to kind of specialize more. There is a sports specialization that you can do if you want to be doing more like on field stuff in particular or on, you know, like event day kind of stuff. But I just have the advantage of I've treated however zillion runners over the last 6-ish years that I've been working almost entirely with runners. And so I can pretty quickly at this point be like picking up patterns and seeing, asking the right questions and that. But definitely it is, you know, there definitely are still days where I have people come into the clinic where like, oh yeah, I saw physio and this, they said this, that I just kind of am like mind blown as though a clinician had given them that information that is a total myth or a total this or that. But really at the end of the day, we have this niche at the Runners Academy. And I've worked really hard to build my knowledge base there. And it's not that other clinicians aren't great. It's just that they don't necessarily have that strong niche. So that's actually why I'm getting a little bit more into some teaching to try and there's so many runners out there, right? And a lot of clinicians who are curious about how they can better support runners. So
yeah, that made me learn so much just on us just having a conversation because Jay-Z's question was so like a thought process that we don't even look at in the sense of I could just go to any sign on a wall that says physio when that person, they're trained, but they're not a specialist. And even then, they would still take you in, maybe put a brace on your foot and, you know, stick to, you know, maybe the very basic or rudimentary things that they've heard about running. And you don't have to do the sport yourself, I'm sure, but maybe so many runners are misguided and didn't have the opportunity to. So you doing education is so key.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, all physios, like we get into this because we genuinely want to help people, right? Anyone who's in the healthcare industry, like we're there because we genuinely want to make people's lives better. I would like to think that, for example, if you were to come into me and you were like, I have jaw pain, technically, I can absolutely help you with that. And I'll take a look and, you know, I'll see what I can do. But if after like one or so treatment, like if it doesn't pretty quickly resolve, or if I look at it and I'm like, oh, there's something I'm unsure of here, then I would like to think that I would refer to someone. Like there are physios, for example, in Toronto, where that is their specialty, that is their niche. So I think we've gotten pretty good in our industry about saying, this is where I am an expert and that sort of thing. Certainly, I always just encourage people that if something isn't feeling great with your care, then advocate for yourself and ask who else you should be seeing or try seeing someone else. But yes, there are definitely different levels of expertise and knowledge there for sure.
Yeah. And you do quite a bit of coaching and mentorship. You have a Run Crew Mastermind class that you do. That's incredible. I never, and I'm not in kind of that industry or that work. So I don't really understand. I never thought that that was such a thing. That's incredible. So what was the thought process on, is it a give back thing or was that something where you recognized maybe a gap in maybe how some PTs were treating athletes? Like what drove that?
So a couple of things, definitely seeing some gaps in like, there's definitely some myths that are perpetuated or people who are like, oh, I've been fighting with this running injury for years and I've been seeing someone and like, okay, well, when they watched you run, oh, they didn't watch me run. That I'm like, okay, but that's frustrating, right? And it's just like, we're not necessarily taught that in physio school. So it's not that they are terrible clinicians. They just weren't necessarily the best equipped to help that person. It's also coming from my own experience of I did spend a few years really spinning my reels of wanting to learn more about this. And like, there are some courses out there. I had taken some courses, but you kind of go, you spend 2-3 days over a weekend being bombarded with information. And then you go back to clinic and you're like, what do I do with this? And how do I put it into practice? And then one of the things that I really saw benefit of in creating more of a like a mastermind and mentorship approach rather than just a weekend long course is for people to have the opportunity, first of all, to connect with other clinicians and sort of bounce ideas in that, but also so that there's a chance to kind of like go put a few things into practice and then come back and have the conversation again of like, how did that go? Or what did you learn or that? As well as one of the things was I was like, I'm super knowledgeable, but it took me a long time to actually then have runners coming in to see me, right? So some conversation too about how can you get the how can you support the community by being like, hey, I'm excited about this and I know more about this than the average clinician. So I guess it was kind of a threefold inspiration for it of just seeing from my own experience of how can I help other people not spin their wheels the way I did. And then by default, help more runners.
The more we know, right? And even that approach itself solidifies the space. And speaking about the space itself, shout out to Runners Academy for even the fact that we have a niche or a focus, specialized physiotherapy or all around health sciences, actual business that's within reach of anyone that lives in Toronto or even outside of Toronto, and coaching. Like, this like sounds like an ad, but
yeah.
We have just a boat running. You know, there are places that are inaccessible to just that. And you may want to be seen by someone that is an expert in this particular sport that you're doing, and you can't. You're stuck to what's locally available. And if we were to, let's say, just stack the amount of career years of experience there, it doesn't exist anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're very lucky to have a team that is so... yeah, just so excited and passionate about helping runners in any way that we can. And what a joy it is for me to be able to go to work and bounce ideas off of people and like, hey, I have a tough case, or hey, did you read this study and that kind of thing. It's a pretty cool environment.
Yeah. And just to jump on the ad bandwagon a little bit. So I was introduced to Brittany, oh God, I feel like it's maybe 5.5 years ago. So I was looking to kind of improve my running to see what I could do. And one of my buddies is like, hey, you know, you should try this class I'm doing, this Building Better Runners class, mm-hmm. that Brittany was doing many years ago. And that was my first introduction to Runners Academy. So I'll never forget this. Going through that class, just kind of learning more about, you know, step overs and all that kind of stuff and my gait analysis and all this and strength training. I remember when I first went there, Brittany asked me to put my goal on the board. And I'm like, I want to qualify for Boston in the fall of 2016.
Right.
Right. And I'm going through this thing, which started December, like I think 2015 or so. And I'm going through. And I'm like, oh, my first race is Good Life. And I remember telling Brittany, you know, I'm just gonna wing it and then prepare myself for the fall. And she's like, right. Why? Why? Yeah. I think you've got the tools you need to try now.
Yeah.
And it was a scary conversation because I'm like, no. I go, 6 months is cool. I can ask 6 months. Who wants to do that now?
Yeah.
But she realized this. I didn't realize this. Was instilling confidence in me to try. And I ended up qualifying.
Yeah, you did.
I mean, I missed the cutoff. Doesn't matter.
Relevant.
Doesn't matter.
You put it out there, right?
I still qualified, and I was like in tears at the finish line, like legitimately, because I could not believe I actually physically did that. So the point of all this is, and the reason why I love the Runners Academy so much, and Chris and Janie and everyone that's over there, is because it's more than just, hey, you know, I got this nagging injury, you know, I'm going to go over there and get this thing tweaked and then I'm just going to go home. It's no, we can actually make you a better runner. Yeah. We've got all these programs and things that we can do. So I think we're really lucky in Toronto. And Runners Academy is not the only one that does it. There's quite a few out there that do it and do it really well. But we're lucky to have these kind of facilities that don't just look at preventing injuries or let me rephrase that, helping you recover from injuries. They actually focus on preventing injuries and building a better runner, which I think is absolutely remarkable. And we did have Brittany on here to talk about
that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the OGs. So again, like, I think it's fantastic, the team over there and kind of what they do. And it's really helpful for runners and a great service for anyone that actually wants to learn.
Right. Well, thank you. To be clear, I did not pay either of you, but thank you.
I know.
True story.
Yeah, we do.
It's like a drop. But I just to chime off that, the idea that we're able to come on a podcast and give some insight. I never been to the academy before. I never experienced the service, that type of stuff. And I don't know everyone over there. So the conversations we're having now opens it up for someone else that was curious and to get to know you ideally, Lindsay. And that's really why the podcast is so important and why Jonathan and I put it together, because we wouldn't have had, even if you went for an actual service, no one's going to give you a spiel. Maybe right. You would, but yes. You're like, someone's coming up at this time, you need to get out.
Yes. Well,
but yeah, just being able to dial it back and have a conversation. And I've learned so much with just this basic part of stuff. And no matter how long you're into the space of running or sports, you don't know it all. And, you know, I might share a tip with someone else, but be so careful to share medical advice. Mm-hmm. And not all of us are careful. And, you know, that needs to be said. So I'm sure there will be more things we learn from each other as we go along.
Absolutely. And that's the joy of it, right? So,
although, Dre, you know how many times, honest to God, runners will ask me, I've got this thing here. What do you think it is? I can't.
You don't give them the quick one? I always say go, like the glute. Yeah, you need to.
Just strengthen your glutes.
Stop sitting on your glutes.
Do you know, even when we go to, you know, running groups and do talks and that kind of thing, there's always someone who's like, so I've got this thing. And I'm like, okay, yep. Come in for a full assessment. I can't just, you know, like, this is exactly what it is. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we definitely do try to really get down to the root cause of what's going on, not just get your symptoms under control, but like, my mission, all of us at the Runners Academy, our mission is for you to leave a smarter, overall better runner, right? To have learned something about how can I prevent this from happening again, but also how can I make sure that I am putting I'm working towards my goals and being smart about it and really tapping into my potential, whether it's strength training or like, hey, reminder, drills are important. Do you understand why you're doing them? Do you understand the purpose of each one? How are you building them in? Things like that. So I'm a little bit biased, but it's a pretty sweet play.
Yeah, it's okay to be biased. And there's no competition across Toronto when it comes to different clinics. There's more than enough runners that that advice. And there's only so much time in the day, you know, to speak to someone. And even if you did it on a mass scale, you still can't see everyone in particular.
Well, and as I started to do a little bit of like the mastermind and mentorship and to dabble a little bit more in when other clinicians would be like, how do you know this stuff? And a few people did sort of say like, okay, but isn't that like, why are you training people to do what you do? And it is like, there are more than enough runners to go around. And I also just very much think like in every aspect of life, but for sure it within the profession, like we're stronger together, right? Like if we can have conversations amongst a group of people who are excited about the same thing and all come out of it having learned a little something, bonus, right? So we're lucky that we're at a place where our schedules are pretty busy. We're not having to clamor for patients. And so we're able to kind of recognize that the more the merrier, and we welcome other people to join this community. Because really, at the end of the day, we just want runners doing amazing things and really excited and enjoying the process. So
yeah, I think that resonates in all your posts, like your Instagram. Like you've been dropping a lot of really great information for runners. Even if people go into like the link in your bio and they look at like your talks and things that you do through Lululemon and stuff like that, it's incredible because, you know, you can just show up in the office and just wait for people with injuries to come to you and be like, okay, I'll treat you. But you're giving everyone so many resources, information to, again, to prevent injury, to just be better at something and really enjoy the process and enjoy the sport. And it's remarkable, like the amount of work that you and even some of your peers are doing in the Toronto community for runners, which is really great. So what are the big things that get you excited when it comes to like community and giving back?
Oh gosh, community and giving back, everything, all of it. Right now, what wouldn't I give to go for a big group run and just cheer people on the whole time? I do think it's one of my favorite questions to ask a runner is, when did you realize that you were running for something bigger than yourself? Like, when was it more than just like, I want to run a 5K in this amount of time? And I always just find it's really exciting and interesting to hear different people's responses to that. And even just like how it spills into every aspect of our own lives, that recognition that like, I'm a better partner, mother, friend, sister, daughter, or clinician, all of the above, one because I run. And so I think any opportunity really to share that with others. We, through the Runners Academy, we've done some work with Team Unbreakable, which works with, in the schools, yes, youth and mental health. And so any opportunity to introduce it to kids is really fun and powerful. And also just a good reminder of for myself of like, don't take this too seriously. Like this is supposed to be joyful, right? So that's really cool. I have had the opportunity to do some cool fundraising initiatives, in particular, as I mentioned, fundraising for cancer research. That's something that definitely has hit home for myself. But I think for me, any moment that I can help someone have a moment of that, like, I had no idea this was possible for myself, and just recognizing how that will spill into every other aspect of their lives. I've been lucky enough to be able to pace a couple of races, and people often will thank you at the end for that. And I'm like, no, thank you. Like, can I run every race with you, please? Just because it's pretty cool just to see them, you know, ride that struggle bus and then just be so in awe of what they're able to do, whether they hit their goals or not, but just even having fought through for it, really. So I think I would gladly never race again if I could just pace everyone.
Like overall pacer. It's just, yeah, you just go out there with your own banner and just pace.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'll probably have a day that I take that back. But for now, I just want to pace the people.
No, I get that, because we do feed off the energy of others when it comes to something like this, because we know what it takes, but not to be bragging about it or anything like that, but just to see someone that never run and then more people. You did say something earlier, Stronger Together. So the fact that you do share your advice from the practice and actually your knowledge in the space, the result of it is when someone experience the treatment and it works, then they believe in the practice. Mm-hmm. If they don't, then they'll count it out as a thing that can help them.
Yes.
So even if they've gone to someone that, you know, might have given them bad advice or just never worked effectively. So the fact that in your own cohort, you're able to actually enable others to make it a thing, that's impressive. And I think that's super, super smart, not just as a strategy, but as a whole. You know, it's like having conferences.
Maybe I'll become a finish line announcer just so I can just watch all those moments that I would be terrible because I'd cry. Yeah.
Serious. That's true. It's a good point. Yeah. Because watching other runners, like the emotion sometimes when they're crossing a line, I'd be like,
I have mid race at one point. I think I was running the New York Marathon and there was someone running next to me who was talking to themselves a lot about like, you can do this, you can do this. And wow. I just turned to her and I was like, I'm so proud of you. And she was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was talking to myself. Why are you butting in?
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, Lindsay, she was on a phone call and she was walking her kid through something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Probably. But that's anyways. Awesome.
That is awesome. What haven't you done yet that you want to do?
Represent Canada in triathlon.
Really?
That was bold. Yes, I've been lucky to qualify a couple of times for the age group. Let's be clear here.
Yeah, that's okay.
Age.
That's okay. Qualify is qualify.
Yeah, but it's always fallen. I mean, I think the most recent time that I had qualified, it was supposed to be in Switzerland. My son was like 2 months old. And I remember the night that you had to commit or not. I was like, do I do it? Do I not? Do I do it? And my clinical brain was like, you're an idiot. Of course you're not doing it. But emotionally, I was like, but I have to do it. So I did not go. Also, there was once where, I had a big exam for some physio stuff and just it's never lined up for me. So that's definitely every time I click no, I'm like, okay, but next time I'm in. So that is my personal goal. And then, beyond that, I don't know. I'm excited to do some races to introduce my son to get him hopefully excited about running. It's always going to be a balance of like, no pressure, kid, but like, you're going to the Olympics. No, not
JG
actually.
JG got tips, man.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
When my son was running, so before the pandemic, he ran a few years. He did cross country. We realized kind of quickly that he's got speed. Like he's a speedy kid.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I got too into it. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then he started to get like upset. And I think sometimes he like made up story, like when he's running through and like he'd be like, oh, someone bumped my shoulder and I fell, like if he didn't do well. And I think he was doing that because he didn't want to disappoint me. And I'm like, dude, it happens. Like that's a crowded space. Like you take a corner in cross country, you're going to get wiped out. Chances are, right? but it just became too much pressure for him, and he just stopped. Like, we would go for runs and training, and he just stopped. But we don't even talk about it anymore. And my hope is that one day he's just like, sees me running all the time, and he's just like, you know what, I want to go for a run. And I tell the story 1,000 times. I didn't start running till I was 40 years old. So if he wants to wait, he waits. But if he one day wants to say, hey, I want to go for a run with you, I'm there.
Bring it on. Yeah.
Totally there. And if it happens, great. If it doesn't, like, I totally understand.
Yeah. I think that example and that, like, teaching physical literacy, if you will, of just like, hey, there's ways to be an active human without being, like, for me, I was always part of team sport. And I didn't know, even I had a phys ed degree, but I still was like, I don't know what to do in a gym kind of thing at first, right? Of, yeah, I think that's so key. So anyways, I'm excited to do active adventures with him, and we'll call you the day that he's pushing back. And I'm like, remind me to back off. Right. So
100%. Yeah. You know, when they'd rather play like video games and stuff, 100%.
Yeah. And you're like, but you could be running right now. So anyways.
Yeah, allow him to grow, because in, you know, I've seen this so much, and I might've said it in other podcasts, where runners that we have running recreationally now, they never did it professionally in school or anything like that. They're just like, okay, we're done now. Why would I go to training? My parents used to force me to do it. Why would I do this recreationally? So earlier in life, they do it. They have more of a chance to not do it later on and maintain that throughout their life. As a Lululemon ambassador, there are a few workshop and focus group and panels that the 318 Queen Street Lululemon initiative. Speak to that just a little bit.
Yeah. So it's all looking, obviously, as with everything else these days, a little bit different through COVID. But we used to run a weekly run crew out of the Queen Street store. And most stores in Toronto will have a weekly run group. Not right now, but typically. And the Queen Street store is really unique in that it has some community spaces involved with it as well. So we've been lucky to be able to, you know, film some videos to do sort of like a runner's toolbox, and which you can find on 318queen.com. Just of getting the other absolute gift of being a Lululemon ambassador is just the getting to collaborate with and connect with and meet all the other ambassadors and learn what's exciting to them and what they're up to and what projects they're working on. So we just, for that, we just brought together all the different run ambassadors across the city and had each one sort of share something that was in their line of expertise. So there's some nutrition stuff, some mobility stuff, some run technique stuff, some strength training stuff. So that was amazing. And then there's also, we just periodically do some like roundtable discussions, conversation, largely just about that. Yeah, like running is so many different things for so many people. And maybe you have performance goals, maybe it's more about mindfulness, maybe it's both, maybe it depends on the day or so many other different things. And just try and really share our experiences as runners and what's lighting us up and what's bringing us joy and where we're struggling and that sort of thing. So yeah, just follow along on 318 Queen and see what we're up to.
I'm going to ask you a question that trips everybody up.
Bring it.
Who should we speak to next?
Oh gosh. Who should we speak to next?
Told you.
I was all like, I got this. Bring it on. Who should you speak to next? I would love. So what we're seeing a lot in clinic is a lot of people who are, for lack of a better term, like a COVID runner. So someone who's just sort of getting into the sport and has only really ever known it kind of by accident that way of they took away all my other options. So here's what it is, but it's become a lifeline for me in some way. So I think that's a voice that we don't hear necessarily as frequently in the run community. So yeah.
Here's what I'm worried about. We're in this place now where many of us are working from home. And it affords us the, hopefully, many of us, opportunity to get a run in. Instead of driving half hour to work, I'm going to go for a half hour run because I now have that time. What happens when we start going back to work? Will people still be active, right? And
I
hope so too. I hope they find a way. I hope that the reason why they started was because they had the time, but then they got into that space where it's like, oh, this is a part of my life. I'm going to figure out a way to maintain it. I say the same thing about COVID puppies, but like, I'm just so concerned about what happens when we all do start going back to work. Now, granted, there are some businesses that are starting to realize that you could still work from home. It's like, we've been successful. You could still do it. And maybe people will work from home a few days a week, but I love that. If anyone for sure is listening to this and is like, and they started running during COVID. And, you know, please let us know. Trey and I would love to speak
DM
to you.
Us.
Absolutely. Please do. Please reach out. But then let's also have that connect.
Yeah, to make sure that you stick with
back.
It.
Exactly. So that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, running, I think, you know, no matter what, there's always some element of roller coaster ride there, right? And so hopefully some people may, you know, you may hit a little bit of a lull and need to sort of figure it out. But I'm here to tell you, you're probably more efficient than the TTC or more predictable. So there you go.
Yeah.
But they're doing all that signal work. I'm sure it's going to get better.
Yeah.
Every weekend it's closed. Exactly. They're doing signal work.
Well, and that was it. Like 9 days out of 10, the TTC has me by 5 minutes. But on that one day, I'm going to be late for class. So there you go.
That's so bad.
Lindsay, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and walking us through kind of your journey. And yeah, just it's great to speak with, you know, someone in your profession, because you think you know a lot as a runner, right? I mean, how hard could running be? You just put on a pair of shoes or Crocs or nothing and you just go out and go for a run. Like, how hard could that be? But there's so much that can, like, mechanics and like gait and all the stuff. So, you know, we're grateful for people like you that are not only treating us but also helping us be better versions of ourselves. So thanks for joining us. And it's been a really, really awesome dialogue. And we can't wait to see you represent Team Canada.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. And also thank you for all you two do for the run community and for sharing different voices and stories. And we're all, again, stronger because of you. So thank you.
Still not paying us, right?
No, no, not at all.
It all things to add. With that being said, this is the Longest Trod podcast. Peace.
Peace.